champion holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And this is Technocracy News and Trends. I'm Patrick Wood, Editor-in-Chief, and welcome to the broadcast today. Today is June 14, 2019, and I don't know if you've looked outside to see what the weather is like today, but some countries and some people are going to soon look out the window and see storm clouds brewing, figuring that their neighboring nation is modifying the weather to cause them harm. Whether intentional or unintentional is immaterial, but I want to point out as we preface this story that weather modification has been a goal since at least World War I. Countries have tried to figure out how they can use the weather to not only create a weapon against the enemy, but also a cloaking device or a confusion device. And so various attempts have been used and tried over the decades. Many of them failed. The story in question today comes from The Sun in the United Kingdom, and the title of the article is Geoengineering Could Start World War III as Nations React. Now, this is a story that deals with geoengineering, obviously, weather modification. I cannot tell you how many times over the years that I have been criticized and lambasted for even talking about weather modification, geoengineering. It's now a little bit more accepted to bring it up in public places than it was before, but it still isn't something anybody wants to talk about in particular. But I'll tell you what, weather modification does not limit itself to just one country. If somebody does something in the United States, it may well affect Mexico or Canada. If somebody does something in Germany, it might well affect all of the nations around it. And for those countries who may take exception at their neighbors modifying the weather, they're not going to be too happy about that. Well, this article starts out, it says, climate change may end up causing World War III if individual countries start to try and save themselves by hacking the weather with a process called geoengineering. Many experts are in favor of geoengineering, which involves manipulating the atmosphere by blocking sunlight or isolating excess carbon. But weather hacking in one region could have a negative impact in another and lead to global conflict, according to scientists. And yes, there are many scientists right now that are speaking out against geoengineering, say, don't do it. Stop it now. Story goes on. It is solar geoengineering that appears to be the most problematic, and not so much carbon capture, because solar geoengineering would involve spraying chemicals into the air that would block some sunlight. When speaking on the sun-blocking topic, geoengineering researcher Juan Moreno Cruz told Business Insider, the threat of war is never out of the question. If geoengineering is going to happen, then all countries would have to be informed and agree, because some areas may be more negatively affected than others. Well, we already know this is true in the United States, because as one section of the country is sprayed with chemicals in the atmosphere, it may cause, for instance, excessive rain in one area and excessive drought in another. This has been demonstrated and documented more than once. And if you consider that one nation may be turned into a drought area because of another nation's work to try and achieve rain, they're not going to be too happy. This could easily be a source of conflict where they say stop it or we'll stop it for you. It's also interesting that back in 1977, the world by and large entered into a treaty called the Environmental Modification Convention. It is formally called the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. It's an international treaty, and it prohibits the military or other hostile use of environmental modification techniques, such as geoengineering. It was opened for signature on May 18, 1977. Most nations of the world signed it. Most African nations did not. Mexico did not sign it. But Canada, United States, most of Europe, Russia, China, Australia, New Zealand all signed it. The convention specifically bans weather warfare, which is the use of weather modification techniques for the purposes of inducing damage or destruction. The Convention on Biological Diversity of 2010 would also ban some forms of weather modification or geoengineering. It says many states do not regard this as a complete ban on some things, like the use of herbicides in warfare. We used Agent Orange, you might remember, in the Vietnam War, which destroyed vegetation in wide areas so that military action would be easier and less likely to be concealed by the enemy. So weather modification is, in fact, real. It is, in fact, practiced. It's been practiced in the United States, especially in the West, for many years now, at least 10, 12 years. People have noticed the so-called chemtrails in the sky. We now know that those chemtrails are not simply water vapor crystallizing, freezing in the atmosphere, but rather they're the distribution of chemicals. We've seen geoengineering, aka chemtrails. That's kind of the conspiracy theory designation, right? Chemtrails. Geoengineering is a technically more appropriate label, but chemtrails are easily seen in the sky when you see a cloud following an airplane high up in the atmosphere for even up to 100 miles, spreading into a thin, wispy, cloud-like structure that blocks the sun. It's just that simple. The problem is nobody in the public asked for it. Nobody could find the public budget for it if the government was doing it. It simply just happened. Well, obviously, it's expensive to fly those big four jet engine airplanes at such a high distance. In fact, multiple airplanes at a time is thousands of dollars an hour just to launch the airplane up there into the sky. So somebody spent an awful lot of money creating these chemtrails over the last 10, 12 years. Well, so much for geoengineering. Now you know the story. The next story has to do with, again, good old Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. There's been a leak, a whistleblower. That person has not been identified, and then he probably is fearing for his job, if not his life at this point, for having leaked this information. But this whistleblower indeed leaked information on Facebook on how they determine who is a hate agent and who is not. And it says Facebook monitors the offline behavior of its users to determine if they should be categorized as a hate agent, according to a document provided exclusively to Breitbart News by a source within the social media giant. The document titled Hate Agent Policy Review. How's that for hitting the nail on the head? It outlines a series of signals that Facebook uses to determine if someone ought to be categorized as a hate agent and ban them from the platform. These signals include a wide variety of on- and off-platform behavior. If you praise the wrong individual, interview them, or appear at events alongside of them, Facebook may categorize you as a hate agent. Now, one of the key things here that I want to point out is that Facebook is tracking off-platform behavior. Well, how do they get that? How do they know what you do outside of what you do in Facebook? Well, they aggregate information from other data sources, and they combine them all into a single database or a single view of you. And depending on what they find and what the AI programs that are analyzing you find, you may well be designated a hate agent without your knowledge and without your input, and you may never be able to erase that from your record. It says also that Facebook may categorize you as a hate agent if you self-identify with or advocate for designated hateful ideology. If you associate with a designated hate entity, one of the examples cited by Facebook was as a hate entity includes Islam critic Tommy Robinson from the UK, or if you have tattoos or hate symbols or hate slogans, how would they know you have a tattoo? Ah, facial recognition, body identification. This document cites no examples of these, but media and anti-racism advocacy groups increasingly label innocuous terms as hate symbols. You can see the social credit system being devised right here in America thanks to big tech companies like Facebook. This is exactly what they're doing. They will take all data that they can get their hands on about you, analyze it all, and if they see enough connections between either ideology or symbols or activities, you could easily be banned, not just from the platform, but even worse, you could be given a label as a hate agent. Just think about the Southern Poverty Law Center on steroids. Once these labels are in place, of course, I'll repeat again, there's no way, there's no recourse for you to have that label removed. It's simply their discretion. So your life literally could be harmed for the rest of your life. Just think about getting a job somewhere down the line, maybe 5 or 10 years down the line, and you apply for a job and the interviewer says, or you find out, well, you were labeled as a hate agent 5 or 10 years ago by Facebook, and I'm sorry, we can't hire you because our policy is we don't hire anybody that is known to be associated with hate. Well, sounds to me like that's a form of hatred right there, doesn't it? Lastly, we want to talk about the Rockefeller Foundation. David Rockefeller and the other brothers, the older brothers, are all deceased now, but the Rockefeller Foundation lives on. We've been following it, tracking it, and the pages here on Technocracy News and Trends for some time. The Rockefeller Foundation recently gave up on its 100 Resilient Cities program. They passed it over instead to the Atlantic Council, which we studied here, wrote an article on. We found out that they're riddled with members of the Trilateral Commission. The two organizations actually work hand in hand on many different things. But now this article, which I headlined Rockefeller Foundation, The Rise, Fall, and Rebirth of 100 Resilient Cities. This points out that the Rockefeller Foundation is far from giving up the idea of resilient cities. They're just changing their focus a little bit. What's rather striking about this article is that it points out the various definitions that are used for the term resilience. This is the United Nations term. That's where it came from. It's a concept that came from the United Nations. It's part of their sustainable development doctrine. It's seen prominently in the 2030 Agenda and the New Urban Agenda as a theme that just occurs repeatedly. Resilience, resilience, resilience. This article reveals the many changing faces of resilience. It depends on who's looking at it, number one, what their frame of reference is. But resilience can mean 100 different things to 100 different people. This was purposeful on the part of the United Nations. But this one article points out here some of those definitions. One of them is, quote, improving mobility. Another one is, quote, breaking down structural racism. Another is about any social and infrastructural fault line. Another one is predictive analysis, even weather forecasting. What? These have nothing to do with each other. Well, you're right, they don't. This is a catch-all term for implementing the New Urban Agenda and the 2030 Agenda, aka technocracy, and basically it can mean anything you want. It's absolutely crazy. But the Rockefeller Foundation is dedicated to it. It's just another way to approach social engineering in urban areas especially, although they are concerned with rural as well, but mostly in urban areas. Social engineering means the conditioning of all the individuals, leave no person behind, all the individuals in an urban area for the sake of directing their behavior, their consumption patterns, their outcomes, etc. This is something that the citizens of various countries did not ask for, do not want, and would flatly reject if they were given the opportunity to do so. But I can guarantee you that most citizens and most cities have no idea who the Rockefeller Foundation is and why they're spending billions on trying to develop this doctrine of resilient cities around the world. Well, now you know a little bit more of the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. Take a look at these articles if you have a chance to read them. Share them around. Remember, there's a share bar at the top of each article. If you don't like social media, you don't work with social media, that's fine. Click on the email icon and email it to your friends and your associates and coworkers, etc. Otherwise, there's over 100 different social media platforms and sharing platforms that can be shared directly from each article. So if you don't see your icon immediately on the displayed share buttons, simply click the one on the far right, it's a light tan color, and it will bring up all 101 different platforms that you can share on. Only you can get the word out. And yes, Technocracy News and Trends has been a victim of shadow banning on multiple occasions. It's easy to spot when it happens because we simply just don't get engagement or traffic views, if you will, on individual stories. They're there, but they just don't get any traction whatsoever. The only answer to this is for you to share directly. Now, they can't stop that. If I share something on social media, they can certainly shout about it. But if 100 of our readers or 200 of our readers share the same story at the same time, within a day or two, they can't stop at all at the same time. So exposure is increased, more people are able to read it, and it has a better chance of getting some traction. By and large, I might add that social media giants have not really caught on to the criticism of technocracy. I think that's about to change, but so far we've been able to fly under the radar by and large. And we're not here to bash anybody, as you know. We're here to discuss policies. We're here to discuss technocracy, sustainable development, the United Nations, 2030 Agenda, the New Urban Agenda, Agenda 21, property rights issues, and all those other things that surround that, including, especially including, scientific social engineering. This is one of the greatest risks to the human race. Well, I suggest again, if you haven't yet read either Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, or my latest book, Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order, get a copy, read it. If you have read it, make a list of 5 people that you can give a book to, or 10 people, and buy a few books in bulk. The discount is extremely deep on technocracy.news. In fact, it goes up to 50%. If you buy 10 books, it's 50% discount. Normally, that kind of a discount is not even available to bookstores, but I want to get the word out. It's not about just trying to make a profit on a book. Heaven knows that's not true. But I pass this kind of discount on to you so that you can grab a bunch of them and take them around to people that need to know and challenge them to get busy. You can challenge people to do that. I do all the time. Get to work. You know, we just can't afford to sit around anymore and play footsie with this stuff. People need to see it for what it is and get after it. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.